What the Underground Railroad was, people helping people.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
When did the slaves escape?
In the winter time, because there was ice on the water, so the dogs couldn't sniff them out. If they were on the ground, that in the springtime, then the dogs could sniff them out.
What are some of the signs that would tell an escaped slave that it was safe to enter a building? Let's talk about that.
Of a quilt hanging on the door, that's a safe spot to go in. If you see a quilt hanging on the door, that's a safe place.
And if you see like a lantern with one of those statues, right? What are they called again? I can't remember. That was a safe house too, right?
Yeah.
What's the Underground Railroad?
It's not really a railroad. It's traveling from house to house.
What was another name for the Big Dipper?
The Drinking Gourd.
Okay. Henry Box Brown.
Yes.
Who was he?
He mailed himself into Philadelphia.
How did he mail himself? He went in...
He went in a box.
Oh my God. Didn't he suffocate?
No.
How come?
Because he had a little kind of a tool, and he poked a hole in the box so he could breathe.
Okay, what invention increased the demand for slave labor?
The cotton gin.
Yeah. What was cotton?
It was a kind of fluffy flower that you pick. And then since they were so good at planting and peeling, then they decided to kidnap them. Africa, yeah. Because they were so good at planting and doing all kinds of stuff, so they decided to kidnap them from Africa.
What do you think about that?
It's cruel. They got squashed in ships, all tied together. And where they had to poo, they had to poo. Right where they were, squashed in the corners of the ship.
Carolyn Westaby, and I'm on staff here at the Dundas Historical Museum. It's Black History Month. In the museum right now, we're talking about stories of Black people who have been in our Dundas community. There is a man named Anderson Abbott, and we tell his story because he is the very first Black Canadian who graduated to be a doctor in Canada. And it's hard for us to remember, but there was a time when if you were a person with black skin, you weren't allowed to be a doctor. That was the rule back then. And Anderson Abbott was the very first person who changed that, way back in the 1800s. And his mom and dad first had lived in the United States back when there was slavery. They weren't slaves, they were free blacks who had their own store. And their store was being vandalized for no reason, just because their skin was black. Well, that's not fair, that's not good, and it's certainly not right. They said, we're getting out of here, we don't want our kids exposed to this. So they moved up to New York State. It wasn't any better there. So they moved over to Canada. Because in Canada, this is long, long ago, things in the United States have changed now. But long, long ago, the laws didn't look after the black people, but the laws in Canada did. So they moved to Canada, and Anderson was born, and he grew up to be a doctor. And throughout his life, he looked to help black people have the very same rights as white people. He lived in Dundas for 8 years with his wife and his kids. And when he was in Dundas, all the time he was asking questions. He worked for the newspaper, and he would write articles in the newspaper that said, everybody should be treated fairly and the same. Abraham Lincoln was a very important man in the United States. He became their president. And remember, this is long, long ago, when the states in the north of the United States were fighting with the states in the South about slavery, when people owned other people and made them work. And the northern states said, we don't want slavery. And the southern states said, well, we do. And they were having a war over this. Anderson Abbott wrote Abraham Lincoln a letter and said, I know I'm a Canadian, and usually Canadians don't go over and fight in somebody else's army, but I'd like to come and be the doctor for your troops because I want to end slavery. Whatever it took to try and help black people have everything the same as white people, he did. The other thing we talk about upstairs is about black athletes. And when we look at our Olympic teams and football teams and baseball teams, there's all sorts of black people on the teams now. But it wasn't always like that. There used to be rules that if you were black, you weren't going to be on these teams. But there was a man in Hamilton who was a fantastic runner, and his name was Ray Lewis. And he was the very first black Canadian to go on to our Canadian Olympic team. He and his team won a bronze medal at the Olympic Games that year. Ray Lewis's grandparents came to Canada on the Underground Railroad. In the United States, in the southern United States, it's a cotton plant. Cotton doesn't come just from the drugstore. It grows on a plant, and it has to be picked. And in the southern United States, it's perfect for growing cotton. It's hot. They have long, long, long sunny days. Okay, across the Atlantic Ocean here, up to Europe. And in Europe, this is called the Industrial Age. And this is when people are inventing new things all over the place. And a guy named Eli Whitney invented something called the cotton gin. And this cotton plant, when the cotton gets picked off of it, it's not all white and fluffy like it is when we get it at the drugstore. There'd be seeds mixed in with it, maybe a little bit of the twiggy stuff off the bush. It's just not the best. And people would have to take off all the mucky stuff so they could spin out the cotton, turn it into threads that they weave, and you got jeans on. Jeans are made of cotton. And this is new. People are liking this fabric. They've invented this cotton gin so they can take the cotton and really, really, really quickly clean it now so they can get it made into fabric. And these guys in Europe are saying, this is fantastic. We can do it so fast. You guys need to plant more cotton, because the more you send us, the faster, you know, we got those machines to clean it real quick. We'll make more cotton, and we're going to be rich, and you're going to be rich, and it's going to be wonderful. These guys over here said, well, that would be great, except that we don't have enough workers because we don't have any machines to pick the cotton. You got to bend it over and take it off of all the plants, and we don't have enough workers to do that. And I thought, well, we have a problem here. But then somebody was thinking, and unfortunately, it was a very crummy thought, and we don't know who it was, but they got thinking about this big continent of Africa. And Africa had many, many millions of people living in it. And they were doing just fine. They had families like yours and mine. They live in villages. Each have their own languages. They have their own way of dressing. They have their songs. But somebody got thinking about the fact that Africa is just about the same level on the world as the southern United States. It's hot. Just like it's hot here. So the people that live in Africa are used to working outside in the hot, because these guys are also very good farmers. The women, the guys probably would have been off hunting and do what guys do. It's the women who were in charge of the fields. They were excellent at planting and taking care of the crops and harvesting. They said they'd be perfect to work in our cotton fields. We're going to get them to work there. But you know what the huge, huge, huge problem was? They didn't ask them if they wanted to work there. They didn't go up and say, give you $10 an hour if you come pick cotton. No, they didn't do that. What they did was they went into their communities where the people were just minding their own business, doing their own thing, and kidnapped them and packed them all on ships. These sailing ships, many, many, many sailing ships, would come down from Europe, down to Africa. The people would be loaded on a squish so tight, because I want money. Because you know what's going to happen? When I get you all to North America, I'm going to sell you $200 a piece. When they kidnapped us from our communities, from our villages in Africa, we each have our own languages in our villages, but the people who kidnapped us have a different language. And sometimes the people who kidnapped us were white. We didn't even know there were white people lived in the world, because there aren't any newspapers. They're not invented yet. There's no television invented. There's no computers invented. We didn't know there was anybody in the world other than black people. So these white people are very scary to look at. And then they're yelling at us in a language we don't understand. And they're chaining us together and loading us on this boat. We don't know where we're going or why. And they got us all mushed on this boat. And they don't let us go up and get any air. And so tightly. And that's where we eat, and they don't give us utensils. That's where we sleep, and guess what? If we have to go to the bathroom, guess where we're going to the bathroom? Right, that very same spot. What a horrible, horrible, horrible trip. And then they got us over there. You'd think we were cattle. These guys who kidnapped us decided to auction us. So I say, here's a fine young woman here. She could work hard in your fields. And look at that. She's got shiny hair. She's healthy. 200, who'll give me 200, 200, 225 to see how high a price on an auction block for a person? And so after somebody bought this fine young woman to be a slave, if I bought her, I become her owner. She has no last name. I own her. She only has a first name. And when you get to my plantation, you do what I say. You had a husband? Forget that. He's gone. It's just you I bought. You had a husband. Maybe he was kidnapped with you. We don't know where he's gone. And I don't care. And you will work 6 days a week. Sunday is your only day off. And you will be picking cotton. You must pick 200 pounds a day, which is a lot. You will only have to eat what I give you. You will get one outfit. That's it. One outfit a year to wear. And because it's so hot, you don't need shoes. Barefoot is just fine. And you may never leave this plantation. A plantation is a big fancy word that in Canada we'd call it a farm. You can never leave. Because if you do, you will be punished. Able to make rules about anything. They could only do what the master said. But they were always thinking about getting away. So some of the kids that have come to the museum have said, well, heck, there's lots of slaves and there's only one master. Why didn't they just like all gang up on the master and like all break away? But they didn't know where they'd go because the master never let them leave the plantation. And so even though they knew they wanted to get away, they didn't know where they'd go to. And they had none of their own money. The master just gave them some food and some clothes. They didn't have their own money, so how would they go anywhere? How would they get a new house? It was really, really hard, so they felt like they were stuck. If they got caught trying to escape, they would be punished. But then they started hearing stories. There was a war that had happened in 1812 between Canada and the United States. And some of the soldiers from the United States had gone up to be in that war. And when they came back down, some of their slaves, maybe some had gone with them. Maybe it was just some around the house, maybe serving them supper or taking care of their horse. Started hearing things about this place called Canada. Because that's where the war had been. It had been up in Canada, right around here. Right down by Niagara Falls. And they started hearing about this place called Canada, where if you were black, you could own a house. If you were black, when you did a job, they'd pay you money. And they would never take your family away from you and send one to one plantation and one to another plantation. You could take care of your own family. You could bear arms for your country, and you could vote if you were a man. At that point, the ladies still couldn't vote, but the men could vote. But all of this was like mind-boggling for them. So now they knew that if they could get away, there was a place that they could get to where they'd be safe. In the United States, there's good laws now, but back long ago, the laws did not protect black people. In fact, if I was a slave who'd escaped and you see me, the law says you're supposed to return me to my master. If not, they could throw you in jail too. And if you would hide me, oy, you're really in trouble. It is a heck of a long way from the United States down where you're growing cotton up to Canada. Especially when planes aren't invented, cars aren't invented, trucks aren't invented. Mostly you're walking. That's a long, long way. So they needed help. There was this guy who was a carpenter, and he was a white man, because there were lots of white people who were against slavery, and they wanted to help the slaves get away. And one was a guy named Peg Leg Joe. And Peg Leg Joe just kind of wandered around. And he was called Peg Leg Joe because he'd had some sort of accident on the way, and he lost his leg, and he had a peg instead of part of his leg. And people didn't pay much attention to him, and the masters, well, they didn't pay any attention to him. They kind of liked him, actually. He was cheap. They could pay him a little bit of money to do carpentry jobs. And they let him wander around on the plantation. He could wander in the slave quarters with the slaves, and he was always singing. They didn't know that he was a very smart man who was helping the slaves. He was a man who, in his song, would help the slaves figure out how to get away. He was helping them learn to follow the stars. If you look up in the sky, there's 7 stars, and they're in a shape. There's the handle, and here's the scooping part. That's called all the constellations. That's what we call the groups of stars in the sky. They all have different names. And this one is called the Big Dipper, because it's like a handle and a dipping part that you could maybe dip soup out of the pot or dip water out of the rain barrel. And if you look at the last 2 stars on the dipping part, they point up at the brightest star in the sky up there, which is called the North Star. And the slaves came to know that if they followed that direction, the north direction, they would get to Canada. So Peg Leg Joe taught them a song, but he used some code. Because if he talked about the Big Dipper, the master might have caught on what was happening. Instead, he used code by calling the Big Dipper the drinking gourd. Because the master didn't hand out knives and forks and spoons for us to use. And we were darned if we were going to use our fingers. They made us do that on the slave ship. We were very resourceful. We realized we'd use shells. We would also take gourds. Down in the United States, in the southern part, they have a big gourd, got a long handle part, kind of a bulby bottom part, and they scoop out from the bulby part, and that would become a ladle. That would become a drinking gourd, because I could also drink out of it. So Peg Leg Joe, just singing that little nonsense song the master wouldn't pay any attention to, singing about the drinking gourd, and he's really talking about the Big Dipper. And it goes, follow the drinking gourd, for the old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the drinking gourd. He's telling them to follow the drinking gourd that'll point them to that North Star that'll help them get to Canada. And he's the old man. And he won't be really standing outside the plantation waiting to get them there, but he's left them clues. Because in the verse he talks about, when the sun comes back and the first quail calls. So the sun has come back, our days are longer. And the first quail, a quail is a kind of bird, and it's down in the southern United States, and it changes its song at this time of year. He's telling them this is the time of year to go. It's still really cold out, and that's good, because when we get to the rivers, when we're escaping, yeah, sure, if it's summertime, maybe we could swim. Maybe if it's shallow, we could walk across. But if it's the wintertime, it's icy, and we can walk across, and that would be much faster. When the sun comes back and the first quail calls, follow the drinking gourd, for the old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the drinking gourd. And the next verse talks about the river. The river's really helpful for us, because you know what's going to be chasing us when they found out we have escaped? Dogs. They're going to have the dogs after us. And they're following us by following our scent. They're going to smell us. But if we walk in the river, they can't smell us. Pegleg Joe, he's walked along the sides of the river, and on the dead trees, he's put a mark that kind of looks like his peg leg to show us the way. So the verse goes, the river bank makes a mighty fine road. Dead trees will show you the way. Left foot, peg foot, traveling on. Follow the drinking gourd. And in the last verse, he again is drawing more of a map. He's trying to help them imagine in their heads, before they go, what it will look like. And he says, the river ends between two hills. Follow the drinking gourd. There's another river on the other side. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd, for the old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the drinking gourd. Pegleg Joe was one person of many, many who were helping on the Underground Railroad. And people are starting to escape faster and faster, because now they know where they can go. And they know to escape at night, because usually the bounty hunters, and they're the guys, believe it or not, they had a job of going out to try and capture slaves. Because if you were the bounty hunter, and you came and got me, and caught me, you knew, you get me back to my master, that's money for you. So the bounty hunters with those dogs, they're after us. But if we travel at night, we're hoping the bounty hunters are in bed. And on top of that, it's obviously not as easy to see us at night. This is back at a time when railroads had just been invented. And everybody thinks railroads are really very special, very cool. Was there a railroad?
No.
Did it go underground?
No.
What the Underground Railroad was, people helping people. So from spot to spot to spot, from the south of the United States all the way up to the north of the United States and safely into Canada. That's what the Underground Railroad was about, safely getting people from spot to spot. Maybe if I get to your house, maybe I can't hide at your house because you know somebody's coming over who doesn't like slaves. But you say to me, it's okay, here's a bit of food. I'm sorry you can't stay here, but there's a cave just down in that ravine where you can hide and you'll be safe overnight. And maybe I get to your house and you say, you wait up at that next corner behind the trees and there'll be a wagon come along and it'll stop. Don't say anything, just get in and hide under the hay. And then the wagon could give me a ride for a little while, because that's a very long walk. And there wasn't really a railroad, but they used the same kind of words. So if we were going from one safe spot to the next safe spot, those safe spots would be called stations, just like train stations. And if there's a person, if I come to meet you to help you, I'm called a conductor, just like on a train where you have the conductor takes your tickets. Baggage. Oh, there's some baggage coming up today. Would be slaves that are coming up that we're trying to transport safely to another spot. And it was a very, very, very long, hard journey. Sometimes you were hungry. You get slowed down because you're trying to find some berries maybe you can pick to eat. Sometimes maybe we'd had a drink of water from the river and it turned out it was dirty water that made us sick. Sometimes we heard the dogs coming and we knew we had to hide. But maybe we see the light shining out front. There were statues people would have on their front lawns as decoration. And if the candle was lit, because this is for electricity, that means it's a safe house, a safe place to go. And I'd be so scared, because what if maybe the lantern just happened to be on, but I'd knock on the door very quietly, and the person would open it, and the code word, a friend of a friend. And if you said, a friend of a friend, and I'd say, a friend of a friend, we'd both know we were part of the Underground Railroad, and it was safe to go in. And they'd give me some warm supper, and I'd get to sleep in a bed. I've never slept in a bed. I don't have to sleep on the floor in the slave cabin. and they gave me some food and sent me on my way. All sorts of clues to help us know what was safe on our way out. But sometimes we got caught, and sometimes we got returned to our masters, and we got punished. But lots and lots made it safely to Canada.
She made the trip by foot from Maryland to St. Catharines 19 times, rescuing 300 people in the process. Called the Black Moses for leading her people away from slavery at a time when people's annual income was measured in the hundreds, there was a $40,000 price on her head, a number that people estimate would be somewhere between $5 and $10 million. There's a tidbit of information on that brave, brave woman.
Book review.
Book.
Book review.
Hello. You know the Underground Railroad? I'm going to talk about a book about it. It's called Underground to Canada. It wasn't underground, you know, or a railway. They've been living with this slave at this plantation since they were born. They get sold and taken to another one, which is much harder.
Most people slurred her name and said Julie, but it was June Lily. She has always picked cotton, but if you don't fill your basket right, then they beat you. Well, she was at this other plantation, which wasn't as cruel as the one she gets taken to. And we weren't having very good cotton picking, so they were starting to sell slaves. And they sold her, because they actually acted their animals, but they sold her, a bunch of some little kids, away from their mom's family. And she gets sold away from her mother. She's only 13. There was even a 2-year-old there. And kids younger. And then they separated them from each other after that. But the road was really long, because it's way to the far south, without water. They got given water by this man and this free black boy, and then they got there and she met a girl called Liza. Liza was like a hunchback because she got beaten so much.
She got whipped so much for running away. But this man came, pretended to be studying birds, but he was really part of the Underground Railway, and he sent them away with a little bit extra food. They had to run away, and they went for this bog to loot the dogs, and they slept by day and they traveled by night. And then the men got captured at this farmhouse. They'd been taken by this Quaker in his hay. They checked it, but they thought it was just hay because they didn't check the hay. They just ripped off the canvas and then put them back and went on. I don't see why they didn't check the hay though. If I had been looking for someone, I would have checked the hay. They were walking along the railway tracks and this freight train went by and they were amazed at the speed. They had gone through the mountains, and they'd stopped in this village, and they'd been given food. They got totally clean and all over and all that. It's nice for them, but just the girls, not the boys. But they were by themselves now. They got cart rides here and there. They used the Underground Railway, but they didn't really know what it was. They thought it was a railway. They actually did. And then they stopped at this farm, because it was part of the Underground Railway. They were told to stop there. The guy there told them what the Underground Railway was. They were in the secret room, and they had to go up onto the roof when the people came to check. For some reason, they keep checking really so close, but they never catch them. They hide in these sacks and go on this freight train, and then they go on this boat with their hats pulled really low and all that. Underground to Canada, if you know what I mean. They got to Canada, and then they traveled in this carriage for 2 days. They got to where Lester was living, but Adam had died after 1 day of living in Canada. And then her mum was there, so it was kind of a happy ending.